Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Pottsville, Pennsylvania, and earned a bachelor's degree in sociology from St. Joseph's University. From 1987 to 2020, she was the head women's basketball coach at the University of Notre Dame, and she compiled a 936 versus 292 record over 38 seasons of being a head coach. She led Notre Dame to the national championship in 2001 and again in 2018. The author of Expect More, her name, Coach Muffet McGraw. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything is Possible. And we're talking to Coach Muffet McGraw, who coached the women's Notre Dame basketball team for 32 years, and she led them to the championship in 2001 and again in 2018. Coach, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thanks, Jack. Happy to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Well, I grew up in a big family, 8 kids, 4 boys, 4 girls. And so we were constantly outside playing some kind of a sport, usually basketball, sometimes baseball, sometimes even football. But we definitely learned a lot out on the playground that I think kids don't learn anymore. You know, we learned a lot about conflict resolution, you know, whether you're out or were you safe? Was that a foul or was that not a foul? You had to learn how to fight your own battles and fend for yourself back then. And I feel like it was always me and 9 guys down at the playground. But my parents were really supportive of me playing sports growing up. So I played basketball and softball, and they came to almost every game. And it wasn't so acceptable back then for women to be playing sports. It's a lot different and a lot better now.
What's the biggest thing, Muffet, you learned from mom? And what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
You know, my mom is really competitive, and I think I got my competitive nature from her. She is she's kind of my role model, my hero. She's been through a lot, a breast cancer survivor, the death of my dad, and we lost my brother back when I was in high school. So she's had a lot of adversity in her life, and she just never stopped moving forward. So I really admire her so much. My dad was kind of the extrovert. He was the MC at events and out always doing some kind of work for the schools, and just such a big fan and supporter of me through my entire career.
How did you get the name Muffet?
Yeah, that's just what's on my license. So it just came about because I don't know actually how it came about, but it's stuck with me.
All right. You earned a bachelor's degree in sociology from St. Joseph University. And then in 1979, 1980, the Women's Professional Basketball League, you played for the California Dreams. How much did you make?
I made $11,000. At least that was my contract. But, you know, the league was fledgling. It was just getting started. And so I was fortunate because my husband was with me, and I think I was the only one married at the time. He used to wait out front with the car running on payday because, you know, back then you had to get the check. You couldn't have direct deposit. So we would dash off to the bank and, you know, like the first 4 maybe would cash. And after that, it was kind of up in the air. And we eventually folded before the season played out. But what a lot of fun. I mean, my husband got a t-shirt that said, "My wife is a dream." And he enjoyed wearing that to the games, which were not very well attended. Let me tell you, we could count the number of fans there during the national anthem.
If Dick Vitale was announcing a couple of those dream games, what would he say about the player, Muffet McGraw?
Well, I was feisty, and I generally led the team in fouls and turnovers. I was very aggressive. I was going to throw the ball whether you were looking or not if I thought you were open, and I did not like to be scored on. So I was probably going to foul you if you were able to get by me.
Do you think he would say you were awesome, baby?
I don't think so.
He is an amazing human being, isn't he?
He really is. I'm so excited to be at his gala for cancer awareness. He raises so much money for pediatric cancer. He has done so much for others in his lifetime. And what a genuinely just really great guy.
If he only got a little more enthusiasm, he could be pretty sick.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. How did you ever get into coaching?
Well, you know, playing basketball back then, it was so much fun. And of course, back then it was very different. You didn't play AAU. We didn't have a lot of other things. It was just really with the team. And after the season, I knew, gosh, I really don't want this to end. You know, is there something I can do in basketball? And so I looked at working some camps in the summer, and then a high school job opened, and I thought, wow, this will be great. You know, I could keep going. So I started my career at the salary of $1,200 a year. My husband was like, is that every month? And I said, no, it's for the year. And I knew from my first day of practice, this was going to be my passion.
From 82 to 87, you were the head coach of Lehigh University. Talk about that chapter in your life.
I loved it at Lehigh. It was a great time for me to be able to make some mistakes. You know, I think when you start out in coaching, so many people are watching, but back then, not a lot of people were watching. And I was able to learn a lot, experience a lot of things, you know, learn what was good for me and what wasn't. I was always a student of the game. I wanted to go out and watch other teams, and I used to do that constantly. But it was great to prepare me for what was next. My teams were really good. I inherited a really good team, and that was fortunate because when you start out well, it really helps you down the road. And I love being there. I love the coaching. I love the kids. And then after 5 years, I knew I wanted more. I wanted to get to the NCAA tournament. I wanted to have a team that could compete nationally. And when Notre Dame opened, I was a little reluctant to apply at first. And my husband's the one that kind of talked me into it.
Well, speaking of, you inherited a good team, great players. I think there was one player named Kathy Engelbert who's done okay for herself.
Kathy Engelbert was somebody that I couldn't decide whether to keep her on the team or not. I mean, she showed up. She looked like a tennis player. Or she actually played lacrosse, maybe looked like a lacrosse player. And she was pretty good. So I thought, I'll keep her around. And what a great leader she turned out to be for us. She was amazing. Just her work ethic, her discipline, her teammates loved her, and how she grew into leadership, and then to be named down the road a CEO, the first female CEO of Deloitte, which was pretty phenomenal. And she did that job for 5 years, worked for Deloitte for probably 30 years, and now as the president, commissioner of the WNBA. So I couldn't be prouder of one of my players.
We're talking to Coach Muffet McGraw, and in 1987, she became the third head coach of the women's basketball team at the University of Notre Dame. Athletic director Jean Corrigan hired her. When we come back, we're going to talk about that 32-year chapter. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Coach Muffet McGraw. In 1987, she became the head women's basketball coach at the University of Notre Dame. It changed, it's transformed her life, and it transformed the life of women's basketball, not just at Notre Dame, but throughout America. How did you get the job?
Well, I think the name of your podcast says it all. If I could get that job, like most women, I was reluctant to apply. I was a little lacking in confidence. Is this, you know, it's a big job? And it really wasn't a big job at that point. But I worried, you know, we're moving. I'm from Philly. I'd like to stick around the East Coast. And there was just so many questions. And my husband finally talked me into applying. So when I came out for the interview, I mean, we just obviously loved it. Never been here before. Walked around campus and thought, this is everything I wanted in my job. I wanted a school with tradition, with great, especially athletic tradition, but I wanted a really good academic school. I wanted a school that stood for something other than sports. And Father Hesburgh had just retired, and he left him his legacy, I mean, throughout the country. What an amazing legacy he has left all of us. So I arrived at Notre Dame, and I was just, you know, kept pinching myself, thinking I must be the luckiest person in the world to have this job.
legendary, probably the greatest university president in American history. What made him so special, Father Ted?
You know, he was somebody that stood up for what is right, and he didn't care what anybody else had to say about it. And my first recollection was of him marching with Martin Luther King and the cover of Time magazine and all of the things that he has done because of his integrity. I think that is the thing about him. He's just such a man of integrity, a man of God. I would visit him and he would, you know, he loved the Holy Spirit. He would always say, "Come Holy Spirit." That is, you know, and I would say, "Father, I get so nervous before the games. So what can I do?" And he said, "Just say that. Just relax and let the Holy Spirit take over."
He told me those were the first two words, or three words in the morning and the last three at night. I had a meal with him once and he offered the Chilean grace, first in Chilean and then in English. "Dear Lord, give bread to those who have hunger, and to those of us who have bread, give a hunger for justice."
Wow.
He was an amazing guy.
He was.
Coach Tom Izzo, another amazing person, great human being, recently said that a college coach is as much a teacher as most professors. Please.
I've always considered myself an educator. I think that it's part of our job is not just to teach basketball, X's and O's and situations, it's to teach life skills. That is the most important thing that we do. And so when we have these young women come in and we get to kind of mold them and help them in their journey to becoming a woman and all of the things, and confidence is one of them that we have to build up in them, but just the things they learn from being on a team, how to be unselfish, how to sacrifice a little bit of what you wanted for the good of the team, how to know that the most important thing is that we win, not that you play or play well. And things that will help you handle adversity. Everybody hits adversity. But in sports, what a great place to learn. You have injuries. You fail all the time. And failure is so important that we learn how to deal with failure and how to overcome it and how to get ourselves back up again. So you learn all these things throughout your playing career. And then when you go off into the world, you're prepared to handle things.
We're talking to Coach Muffet McGraw. And in 2013, 14, and 18, she was named the AP College Women's Best Coach of the Year. You mentioned in your last answer about young, great women. Often, what's it like meeting and recruiting great 18-year-old girls and over watch as they transform into terrific young women?
You know, recruiting is the lifeblood of your program, and it's so important for us that we have our core values, you know, honesty and integrity, and accountability, a competitiveness, a culture that we try to build at Notre Dame that's one of belonging, and we have that great culture. And so we want people that fit into that. We want people that are unselfish, that want to win, that have a team first attitude, that are hard workers. You can't teach some of those skills. You can't teach somebody how to work hard if they don't have it in them. You can't teach them how to be competitive. So we really try to get the intangibles. Everybody's a, you know, there's a lot of good players out there. And of course, they have to be a great student as well. And when you get them in as freshmen, most of them are a little unsure. And it's amazing to me how you can be when you're a really good player. Most of them are All-Americans or the best player in their state. They're also really good students. And yet somehow they're a little unsure. So I think it's a great chance to kind of build them up. And it's a great time in their life. That transformation into womanhood is such an important time. And I think my favorite thing is to see them have that moment, that game, that time where they've reached their potential, and you just see them stand a little taller and walk a little prouder, and they have that look that says, like, "I knew I could do it, and I finally did." And so I think the joy of seeing that moment, seeing the successes. My favorite pictures after any win is always them jumping into each other's arms and the celebration on the court, because that joy is something that really, that makes my job so special.
Speaking of joy and a great feeling, talk to us about March Madness. Nothing like it. How do you explain it?
You know, there really is. It's just a different time of the year. And people always say, what's practice like for the tournament. Does anything change? And I said, everything changes. The intensity is ratcheted up to another level. They know it's win and go home. You have a chance during the year to prepare yourself, you know, by maybe having some losses to learn more and move on. But this is all about winning. And so there's a lot more pressure. There's a lot of intensity, but it's just such a fun time of the year to turn on the TV and be watching men's games and women's games and seeing all these exciting upsets. And parity is finally coming to the women's game. So I think that March Madness for the women this year was unprecedented. Our numbers were all up across the board for ESPN, for people watching. The games were really close. Every game was exciting. We didn't have many blowouts, if any, even in the early rounds, which we used to have, because of course we're all at one neutral site. So I thought the tournament was exceptional. We've had sellouts for years in the finals, and of course this year we weren't able to, but women's basketball is on the rise.
Women's basketball took a huge leap when a lady named Pat Summitt went to University of Tennessee, the late great Pat Summitt. What did she teach you?
You know, she was just a hero to me, and I didn't have a close enough relationship for her to call her a mentor, but I watched from afar. We, of course, played them and lost to them 20 straight times. We were 0-20, finally beat them in 2011 in the regional final to go to the Final Four. So it was a pretty special win towards the end of her career. But what she did for women's basketball is something that nobody since she's gone is able to do, because she had a voice that everyone listened to, because they knew she didn't talk about just what's good for Tennessee. She talked about what's good for women's basketball, the things she stood for, doing it the right way. She was very honest in recruiting. She wasn't somebody that you thought was going to disparage your program. You know, she really wanted women to be successful. So she stood up and really worked to hire a lot of women. She was just an amazing woman and an icon that we've lost in our game, and just truly an amazing person.
Another huge rivalry was a guy named Gino Auriemma, Connecticut. Talk about him.
Well, Gino really is somebody that raised the bar. When we were in the Big East Conference together, we joined, I think, in 1996, and they were a team that was just getting started, and you kind of measured yourself against them. They were the team to beat. They were the team that everybody wanted to beat, to compare themselves to say, you know, you have a good program when you beat them. And we couldn't call it a rivalry in the beginning because we never beat them. So it took a while to get that going. And he is somebody that ultra successful. I think his record, over 1,000 wins, hardly any losses. It seems every year he loses, you know, a handful of games, if that. But he's somebody that really raises the bar for everybody because of the way he runs his team. And he looks for kids with good character. So we recruited against each other quite a bit. And, you know, we won some. They probably won more.
We're talking to Coach Muffet McGraw, who led the Irish to 24 NCAA tournament appearances, including a streak of 22 straight. And she led the team to 9 Final Fours. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WGR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Coach Muffet McGraw, who in 2001 led the women's Notre Dame team to the national championship game against Purdue. Duck Soup, tell us about the game.
It was the ugliest game I've ever been in, honestly. I think I might have watched a little bit of it at some point afterwards. Back, you know, it was on VHS tape, so it was, you know, it was that long ago. We after the game, we had to get all the way back to campus before we could actually see what happened at the end. You know, that shot they threw up almost went in, and so it was a very different time. But that game, we had beaten Connecticut in the semifinal, which was a huge game, you know, a big comeback. We were down 15, 16, came back and won by 15. So that took a lot out of us. When we got to the Purdue game, we had the lead in that game for about 1:05. So they were winning almost the entire game. We tied it up, and then Ruth Riley made 2 huge free throws to win the game. And that was just a phenomenal experience. You know, the first one is always so special. We were in St. Louis, the home of my point guard, and then came back to campus that night and were met at 2 o'clock in the morning by about 3,000 fans from anywhere around South Bend, as well as all of our students and faculty. And that was one of the moments at Notre Dame that I just, it's one of the most special times. I will never forget that moment.
Ross Perot says a lot of things. One of the things he said was, it's a funny thing about people. Very often when they get successful, they quit doing the very things that made them successful. When you get to the top, how do you stay at the top?
Boy, that is so true. And I talk about that in my leadership class, because when you're successful at the end of the season, some people say, well, let's just keep doing what we're doing. And I think that you have to continually move forward. You have to continually look in the mirror. You have to look at your whole program and see what went well, what can you improve on? How's recruiting going? Is there a different offense we want to do? Do we need to do different things with the team? How's our culture? I mean, we evaluate everything after every single game, but then at the end of the season, you look back at the whole thing and it's time to freshen things up. What do we need to do that's new? We don't want to be in a rut. We don't want people to think, oh, that's the same way they do it all the time. Obviously, you want to stick with the things that were successful, but you always have to look and be willing to make changes. And I think change is hard for a lot of coaches, but I think it's really important that you do it.
Any coach, there's a lot of highs, there's a lot of lows. How do you learn, Muffet, to handle each?
Yeah, the experience, boy, that was hard at the beginning. You know, you just get so high off of a big win, and then every loss, I think it took a little bit out of me. I really struggled with that. I hated losing. I kept it inside me for days. You know, we would almost be at the next game and I was still wondering about that last loss. You know, what should I have done differently? And it really was draining. I know that there's losses I still look at. Like 2010, we lost in a game to go to the regional final, and I can't let them go. And I think that's really one of the hardest things in coaching. You have to learn how to let things go. And it took me so long to be able to do that. And now I feel like I got a little bit better at it, but still, there's always that last game. You know, I look at the last game of my career, it was a loss. And I think, oh, every morning I would wake up and think, oh, God, was that a dream? I wish it was that what didn't happen. So I think the wins, it's easy to stay level-headed after a win now because there's always a next game. And my problem was actually, I didn't celebrate the victories enough. You know, I was like, oh, yeah, we won. Like, great. What's next? Who's next? You won the regular season. What about the conference tournament? What about the NCAA tournament? So I think that's a couple of the things I learned was, one, celebrate the victories. Really, you need to celebrate them. And two, put the rest of it in the rearview mirror and move on.
All right. The epitome of a season of highs and lows probably was 2018 for you. You had four players go down with ACLS injuries. Talk about that season.
That was a season full of adversity, and the announcers would say at the final four that, well, they have more ACL injuries than losses. You know, that when does that ever happen? But we lost our best player to start the year, Breonna Turner, preseason player of the year in the ACC, knee injury. And then throughout the first couple weeks of practice, lost our backup point guard. Then we lost our backup center, promising freshman. And then in January, we lost our point guard. So we lost four players. We didn't have a lot of depth anyway. So we played six people the rest of the way. My bench was full of walk-ons who had to play. I mean, they got in the game, even in the NCAA tournament in close games. So it was a season where we felt like we were constantly just kind of getting punched in the gut. And we fell down a lot. We had one really embarrassing loss at Louisville that really kind of defined our season, because we came back from that, lost by 40 on national TV, came back, played Tennessee at home, we're down 15 at halftime. And I thought, this is our season right here. And we fortunately, due to Marina Mabry and her grit and tenacity, getting the team ready to go out of the halftime, turned that around there. And then, you know, it just got to be, we are resilient. We were relentless. We never changed our goals. We kept saying, I don't care how many players we have, as long as we have five, our goals to win a national championship. And we had a tough road in the NCAA tournament. We went out to Oregon. We had to play Oregon out there in the NCAA tournament, won that game. And so that Final Four was one that you just thought, oh my gosh, are we finally catching a break? I mean, I felt like when that last shot went in, when Arike hits the shot from the corner with, you know, 3 seconds on the clock and the clock expires while the ball's in the air, it just was kind of, wow, finally something went right. You know, after all of the punches we took during the year, we finally were rewarded with something good.
That was April 15th, 2008. 17 years later to the day that you won your first one, when you put your head on the pillow that night, Muffet, what did you think?
Well, it was funny because that's all the media wanted to talk about, 17 years between them. And I said, you know, some people don't have any. I'm kind of happy that we have to talk about this. So 17 years to the day, and it was Easter Sunday, which, you know, little Notre Dame Catholic, maybe the leprechaun was helping us out. Maybe somebody else was helping us out from above. But that was, it was just so rewarding to come through a season when, you know, you've just been hit by so many things and to just keep moving forward. And that is the tale of that team. I mean, just the relentlessness that they had, the resilience that they showed to show that women could come through so many tough times. And we were the only all-female coaching staff in the Final Four. I was the only female head coach. So that made it a little more special.
You were a head women's basketball coach for 38 years. What's the biggest thing that taught you?
You know, I think you learn so much about yourself. When I started, I was more like Bobby Knight. You know, this is it, my way or the highway. Here's the bus. Get on. I'll tell you where we're going. I'll tell you where you're sitting. Don't ask me any questions. And people, that's how you coached back then. You know, you were in charge and you did it all. You were the commander in chief. And then as time went on, the generations changed and kids wanted to ask more questions. And they talked more about having a relationship with the head coach. And that was something for me. I'm not a typical woman, I guess you would say, because I'm definitely not the warm and fuzzy and empathetic, sympathetic type of person. I'm more like, give me the facts. What are the stats? You know, here's where we're going. So I had to change. I mean, I did a 180 from where I started to, you know, around 2000, started to look at my team and say, like, I need to get to know them more off the court. Because when you have a good relationship off the court, it's much easier on the court. You don't get as mad at them because you know what's going on in their life and you know what's happening to them. And so I think that really helped me. And I became more of a question person who at practice, instead of saying, this is what we're doing, I would show them film and say, what do you think we could have done differently here? What would you think about this? How did you like the way we guarded the ball screen? What do you think about the scouting of this team? Trying to get some buy-in from them, I think, was the main reason, but also building up their confidence. And I think that, and I found that I enjoyed it a lot more. And so having that relationship, and now, you know, when former players come back, you know, that just makes it so much more fun.
We're talking to Coach Muffet McGraw, and she's the author of Expect More, Dare to Stand Up and Stand Out. When we come back, we'll ask her about what she wants us to get out of that book. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WGR.
Jack Rasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible. Anything. 15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.
Anything is possible.
I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to Coach Muppet McGraw, who for 32 years was the head coach of the Notre Dame women's basketball team. Muppet, your recent book, Expect More, Dare to Stand Up and Stand Out. What's the message of the book? What do you want us to know after reading the book?
Well, I picked the title because I felt like women don't expect more. We never do. We never did. We took whatever we got. We made it work. We always went along. We got along. We were good sports. You know, we didn't always demand or ask for what we deserved. And it started to bother me because I would look at my players and I would say, gosh, look what the men are doing. Look what we're doing. Is this fair? And I thought, I need to start fighting more for them because I'm the role model they're looking up to see how things are going. And when Skylar Diggins came to Notre Dame, she brought a swagger, which is not something that women generally have. In fact, I would say women really suffer from lack of confidence. So when she came in, I thought, gosh, she's really got a swagger. Is that something that I want? Is that something I like? And I would watch men's games, and of course, they all had a swagger. And so I thought, gosh, why not? Am I being sexist saying she shouldn't be as exuberant as some of the guys are? So she brought her confidence and her swagger, and it really just was contagious. The whole team got more confident, and she changed our whole program. I mean, I think that's when we started to really get good and head to more Final Fours in a row. And then Arike Ogunbowale came in, and she had a swagger, and then I was ready for it. I knew exactly what it was, and I really encouraged it. And I tried to look for that because you can't really teach that either. So I love the fact that they had that swagger. And that's something that women, like, we have to get comfortable with that. We have to get comfortable with being able to stand up for ourselves and accept compliments, because we don't. Because when women are complimented, the first thing we do is say, oh, my staff did such a great job preparing, and my team really stepped up, and the players were wonderful. And when you tell a man he did a great job, he just says, thank you. And so I think there's so many lessons that women can learn from men. We don't network the same way. We don't sell ourselves. We don't ask for a raise as often as men do. And when we do ask for a raise, we don't ask for enough. We are just really content. And we kind of wait around for permission. You know, we wait for people to notice how good we are. And so it's a little bit about having women gain the confidence to really stand up.
Speaking of accepting more, expecting more, what do our young people most want and need today?
Well, I think you saw this generation in the NCAA tournament this year when one of the players noticed that the weight room was different for the men and the women. You know, she went right onto social media, which is a big tool for them, and showed the world, this is what the NCAA thinks of women. And then they went further and talked about all the other discrepancies and disparities in equity that were happening between the men's and women's tournaments. So I think this generation is one that really sees equality a lot different than prior generations. This generation is not going to stand for it. They're not going to take anything less than equal. And I think that we have a great future because of this generation. They are going to stand up for themselves, and they are going to demand to be treated better. And I am so excited for the future.
All right, let's go. September 8th, 2017. Springfield, Massachusetts. You're inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame along with Tracy McGrady, Bill Self, Jerry Krause, Rebecca Lobo, Robert Hughes, Tom Jurstedt, Manny Jackson of the Harlem Globetrotters, Clayton, and a couple others. Talk about that night.
Well, just getting the call was amazing, and knowing that I would be among so many just unbelievably great players and coaches, so many of my heroes that I grew up watching, of course, because there wasn't a lot of women to watch back then, so I followed a lot of the NBA, and to be in that hall for that moment, I just really had a chance to finally look back, because like I said, on your career, you kind of just keep going through, and you don't really think about the success that you've had. And so that was kind of a moment to reflect. And the best thing about it was you could reflect back on all my assistant coaches who had been with me, all of the amazing women that I've had the opportunity to coach, my husband and some support staff and family that had been with me all throughout. And so it was a great moment for all of us to really just enjoy all those things together as a family and with friends, and to really appreciate how much goes into that. How many people are behind you? You know, it's not one person that does all of this. It is so many people behind you. So it was a great chance for me to thank everybody. It's been a big part of my life.
Speaking of assistant coaches, Muffet, most every one of your assistant coaches over 32 years were ex-players of yours.
I love having ex-players because they know me. They know exactly what I want. So if I'm a little bit tougher on somebody, they can pull them aside and say, hey, listen, I've been there. I know what you're feeling right now, but here's what she wants. Here's what she needs. And here's what she expects of you. So I think I love having people that played the game and were successful because it's good for the players too, because these kids want to be where they are. They want to say, oh, you played professionally. Wow, I'm going to listen to everything that you have to say. So I think it's really important in that way. And I think knowing that they've gone through the rigors of the academics, you know, they know exactly what Notre Dame is like, what to expect there. And so I think it's important that they have good role models and somebody, you know, that they feel like they can look at and say, this is somebody who I can really talk to. I can really relate to them because they walked in this same path that I'm walking in right now.
Speaking of knowing what Notre Dame is like, you either love Notre Dame or you hate Notre Dame. But there's a saying, you don't graduate from Notre Dame, you become Notre Dame. Why so?
Well, you know, Notre Dame is a family. It really is an amazing place. When you look at our alumni network around the world, we have more alumni clubs in the country than anybody, but around the world, there are alumni clubs everywhere. We're starting to get campuses everywhere. And because it's all about that dorm life, you know, we're really about community here. We don't have fraternities and sororities. People don't live off campus. You have to live on campus for 3 years. You really get to know the people in your dorm and in your hall, and you spend so much time with them. And they really, it really resonates that this is what Notre Dame is all about. It's about the people. You know, it's not about, yeah, you're learning great stuff in the classroom, but it's about the people and all coming together. Whether it's on the football game day and they're cheering them on, or they're in a basketball game, or they're doing something else entirely that's academic related. So I think it's a place that it nurtures the spirit and people really get connected. And I think that's one of the problems with the pandemic. You know, we're kind of losing a little bit of that connection because we're trying to keep so far apart. And it's such a big part of Notre Dame. I love Alumni Weekend.
Muffet McGraw, thank you for being a phenomenal guest. Thank you for 32 years of service at a special place and the thousands of lives that you've touched doing it in a classy way. Please keep
up. Thanks, Jack. I was blessed to be at a wonderful institution, and Notre Dame to me is definitely the pinnacle of where I wanted to be.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasulo. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohom.
Believe in yourself.